Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. Have alongside with me my co-host, my friend, and recent Split Zone Duo Patreon guest, Parker Fleming. Parker, how you doing?
Doing great. I was happy to talk to our friend Richard. He and I were talking, and he was like, "Wait, I don't know. Have we had you on before?" And I said, "No, but we've had you and Alex and Godfrey on our podcast in the past." So good to talk to him. And Richard is like a professional journalist, capital J. And so he asked me questions and then can't tell me to shut up because I'm being annoying. And so I just got to nerd out about college football. It was a lot of fun.
It was very fun because A, they called you a nerd, literally in the show description, which I enjoyed. Also a wonk, which is one of my least favorite terms. And then B, yeah, Richard's an actual professional journalist. So listening to him reminded me of like, oh, right, that's why I washed out of journalism. Because he's very good. So it was enjoyable to hear the two of you chop it up. Subscribe to Split Zone. They do a great job.
Absolutely. Big fans of that over there. BetUS show, we switched to 2 weeks or two times a week today. Grant, I got to tell you, pretty big flex here for me. We passed today our viewership, max viewership live concurrently on YouTube. We quadrupled it today. Like the most we ever had last season at one time in the show, four times that were in there today. People were awesome. Some of you guys I recognize from TCU Twitter, you listen to this podcast too. So shout out to that. That's been a lot of fun, man. And we had a really great week last week. So a really great show. We're going to do it again at noon Central Time tomorrow.
Yeah, that's awesome. Go watch that. Subscribe to that. I just tried to pull it up on my computer, but through a weird series of scenarios, I'm on my work computer and it blocked the website. So we're going to the phone right now. But we will be using... if you are on a personal computer, please choose BetUS, US's show. Parker, let's actually talk about a college football game, man.
Real live football.
TCU plays on Friday.
Yeah, man, I can't believe how excited I am. Like, I knew I was going to be excited. I did not know that I was going to be, like, ravenous. I'm leaving Thursday morning to go down to Boulder. Going to get out there Friday afternoon early and tailgate. And, man, it's just going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, I was going to say you and I would be on the same flight, but we live in different locations. But, yes, I'll be in Boulder Thursday morning as well. And we'll link and build on Friday. Super excited. Never been to Colorado. Cannot wait to get to Boulder.
Never been to Colorado as in like the University of Colorado, or you've never been to the state of Colorado?
I guess I had a layover at Denver Airport once, but other than that, I've never been to Colorado.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Okay. Incredible. Very fun.
I'm very excited to tour the Denver Airport for the conspiracy theories, but that's a different podcast.
Don't get me started on that. That's for double platinum subscribers. We'll talk about that later.
I just want to see Blue Lucifer. But Parker, before we get to previewing the game, did you know that Towns Van Zandt attended the University of Colorado for almost two full years?
I knew that he had attended at some. Two full years feels like, hey man, you've taken the gen eds and you're getting into the upper division classes and you're like, nah, screw this. This isn't for me.
Well, I said almost. I'm not sure he finished. It says dropped out as a sophomore, which tracks, I think.
That's rock and roll.
Towns. Yeah. Also, we've got a former president of Liberia, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, which is sick.
That only feeds into the New World Order Denver Airport conspiracy theory, but we won't go there.
Yep. If you remember the band 303, which had Don't Trust the Ho.
A couple other ones. You know how sometimes lyrics get burned in your brain and you just hate that they're there and you wish you could delete them and do something else? Hush, girl. Shut your lips, do the Helen Keller, and move with your speak with your hips or whatever. Good Lord. Mm-hmm. What the hell were we? Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
I also almost just said Good Girls Go Bad before I remember that was Cobra Starship. They're the same band. It's the same band. South Park guys went there, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. And then just a ton of astronauts. Like an unbelievable amount of astronauts.
They have a really good STEM reputation. A good Grant, fun fact. the only school that I have ever applied to that straight up said no. Not like, no, like, eh, we can't fund you. They were just like, no, you can't come here. They far outpaced my academic prowess. And yeah, really, really good engineering, really good economics, really good science and technology school has done a lot to contribute to America through, you know, astronauts and other, a couple big studies came out of there. So pretty impressive university. I think maybe underrated in terms of their academic prowess.
I think so too. They also beat the shit out of Nebraska that one time, in ruined Nebraska in like 2003. It's all been downhill since then.
Yeah. 2001.
Yes, 2001. That's right. So that and then Jack Swagger, aka Kevin Bacon in Apollo 13. That's the two bigger.
Comments. That's good. Was that a good way to set the tone for the podcast? Me correcting you on a detail that didn't matter. I feel like that's exactly. Yeah, it's good. It's exactly what you want to hear.
Give a year.
Said 2003.
Around 2003. We asked our listeners, transition, best country song about Colorado. This was tough for me, but I think you have an answer.
Yeah, so there's a couple low-hanging fruit that are pretty obvious, and then I think there's a couple interesting choices. So a lot of people said Rocky Mountain High by John Denver. Fine with it. I think it's a low energy song. I don't mind John Denver. I'm just not putting him on any like greatest of lists when it comes to actual songs. Other ones we got. I mean, honestly, I don't know that I saw a lot of other ones besides Rocky Mountain High. That was definitely the one that was the most put up there. We got some votes that would please you. Colorado Girl by Townes Van Zandt.
Correct answer.
Denver by the Gatlin Brothers because of the fiddle was a just an excellent pick. I do love that old time music, and so that one was really good. I have some other candidates, Grant, that I think are flying under the radar here though. Hey Colorado by the Flying Burrito Brothers. Flying Burrito Brothers, I mean, just absolutely underrated band because the singer like euthanized himself by having his agent light his car on fire in the middle of the desert while he was in it. There was a whole court case about it. It was crazy, man. They were into some weird stuff. Get Out of Denver by Bob Seger, which is in fact a country music song. If you look at, you know, the chords they're using, kind of the vibe there, even though Bob Seger's not a country music artist. Someday Soon by Judy Collins. Song about the rodeo. Excellent, longing, nostalgic, very much Front Range, which people think about Colorado as the mountains. Grant, Colorado's mostly the Front Range, especially on the east side. Mm-hmm. Denver, people in Denver will be like, I love living in the mountains, and post a selfie where all you can see is buildings. The mountains are very far away from Denver. My leader for best country music song, if I can posit it, I think Colorado Girl is up there. Hank Williams, OD'd in Denver. I OD'd in Denver, and I just can't remember her name. Hank Williams Jr., excuse me. Hard to beat that, man. That's a pretty great one.
It's very hard to beat it. I will. It's not a country song. I have to throw in my guy Joe Walsh in Rocky Mountain Way. Obviously, it's a standard answer. That song also rips, so I'm not going to argue with it. It's very good.
I think 2022 is the year of unapologetically liking things that are good, even if they're overplayed. My brother, who's a couple years older than me, sent me a playlist today that was like the best of Oasis. And he was like, oh. I know, but just throw it on while you're working. And I listened to it and I was like, man, every single one of these is awesome. As trite and played out as they are so freaking good. So it's 2020 is the year of unironically, enjoying good things.
Yes, I love that mantra. Also, as long as your favorite Oasis song isn't Wonderwall, congratulations, you've gone one step deeper than other people. And Wonderwall's a good song, so who cares? You have a note in here as well, Parker. See, this is a really special episode of Explain It to an Idiot, in which you tell me the difference between buffalo and bison. Which you have taken more notes for this than I believe you have for Colorado's offensive line. So please educate me here.
This is so important to me. I have a really good friend who went to the University of Colorado and was actually studied engineering there. And we talked about this at length. He would smoke a pipe. We'd have a couple beers. We'd sit on the porch and we'd always come back to buffalo versus bison because it's like an open question. Some people are very agnostic about it, but I think I have a definitive answer. Grant, no buffalo live in America. There are no buffalo in North America. Home on the Range is a lie. It's a lie of a song because people didn't know what they were looking at. The difference between buffalo and bison is threefold. You got to remember your three H's, right?
Okay.
Hump, home, horns. Hump, home, horns. Hump. Bison have a hump.
Hump.
Buffalo do not. Bison have
home horns was actually, that was kind of your mantra freshman year.
It's my nickname in high school. There's one PFF college tweeted today something about Food Locker at the West Virginia Pitt game. I was like, yep, Food Locker is what they used to call me in high school. Bison. Okay, bison have a hump, like a water buffalo, right? It's got the big thing. Buffalo do not. Bison have a beard. Buffalo do not. So the big, hairy, kind of monstrous, majestic thing you think of in North America, that's a bison, not a buffalo. Colorado is named incorrectly. Home, not home of the range. Buffalo are actually indigenous to South Asia and Africa. Bison are North American entirely. Some in Europe as well. And then horns. Buffalo have long horns, and bison have short and sharp horns. So there are no buffalo in North America. Colorado's mascot, they call themselves buffalo. It's actually a bison. A lot of that is because Teddy Roosevelt just liked the word buffalo, Grant. And when Teddy Roosevelt likes something, America does it. National parks, boxing, smoking, all of those things.
Football.
And Teddy Roosevelt said that. He talked about the bison and said... He called bison the part of the last remnant of a doomed and nearly vanished race, talking about the Native Americans. Few indeed are the man who have now or evermore shall have the chance of seeing the mightiest of American beasts in all his wild vigor, surrounded by the tremendous desolation of his far-off mountain home. So shout out to the domestication of the American bison. It's truly a tragedy as the frontier has closed.
Parker, we will get to Colorado football here in just a sec, but I just realized that we omitted the best country song about Colorado. No More Buffalo by James McMurtry.
Oh!
We headed south across those Colorado plains, just as empty as the day. We looked around at all we saw and all we'd hoped to see. Looking out through the bugs on the windshield, somebody said to me, no more buffalo, blue skies, or open road.
Man, that's a tragedy because we are the James. We are the nation's, Grant. I'm going to make a bold claim here. I think it's true. We are the nation's preeminent James McMurtry themed college football podcast. No one else does James McMurtry in college football as well as we do.
I'm 100% confident that that is exactly correct.
Here's my promise. If TCU wins 8 games or more this season, Grant, I am going to email James McMurtry's publicist every day until he get him to send in a soundbite for us.
If TCU loses to Colorado, I will just sing No More Buffalo on this podcast. I can make that promise to you.
Let's talk about this game. We're vamping a little bit, Grant, because Colorado's real bad, man.
They stink, Parker.
Under Coach Carl Durrell, who's an NFL guy who has he coached at Colorado for a while as a defensive line guy, they're 8-10. A lot of that comes from the Alamo Bowl in 2020, the weird year. Carl Durrell took the job less than 4 weeks before spring football because Mel Tucker did the Irish goodbye and went to Michigan State after 1 year. So that was largely Mel Tucker's team. He took 4-2 to the Alamo Bowl. In 2021, they were 4-8 with a 51st overall strength of schedule. They beat Northern Colorado, one of the most god-awful Arizona teams I've ever seen, Oregon State, who was really fun on offense, but very, very, very bad on defense, and then a Washington team who had just quit. If you're trying to get this positive, they went 2-2 in their last four, but they didn't really get blown out by Utah, but they were really not in that game, and Utah was just trying to stay healthy. Grant, in history, Colorado has had a winning season just 4 times since 2000. That is not good. There was a great history in kind of that 1989 to 1996 run. They averaged 9.75 wins in that tenure. But man, it has not been the same.
At least half of one.
They at least had a claim to it. I mean, man, just not a really good recent history. Mike McIntyre, you know, won in 2016 with them. They had Laviska Shenault, who's one of the most fun college football players of all time, mm-hmm. the wide receiver lined up in the Wildcat, did all sorts of things. But man, just not a good overall history, not a good recent history for Colorado football in any way, shape, or form.
Well, at least the good news is they're also bad at recruiting. they were 65th in 2021. Four of them were Texas guys, 58 in 2022, with 25 recruits. And that's still a bad class. By the way, five QBs split among two recruiting classes. Nine of them were Texas guys. Still no blue chips for 2023 and seven Texas guys. So I don't necessarily know what Carl is doing here, trying to plumb the depths of Texas football. But they stink, baby. They're not good.
He has not taken a blue chip recruit. 2020 was not his recruiting class.
That's true.
Three cycles without a blue chip. You're playing Power 5 football, dude. You have to have players.
Kansas will get a blue chip every now and then.
Yeah, I mean.
But they'll come close. Just yeah.
Not great. Not great at all. And if you look at the state of Colorado, I mean, I think there has been a narrative about Colorado Colorado, the state football, like Denver's a growing area. High schools are investing in sports and everything. But there was only in the 2021 class, there was only two four-stars in the entire state. And they went to Texas A&M and Oregon. In 2022, there was only two four-stars. They went to Oklahoma and Iowa State. In 2023, there's only three four-stars. They're all going out of state, Iowa State, Arizona, and Oklahoma. Colorado's not even keeping the best players in the state at home, not even competing for those guys. So kind of a rough scene. You can see a kind of increase in poaching Texas talent, which there are worse strategies than diving into Texas and trying to take the three stars that might not have gotten what they wanted and get them into the Power Five. But I mean, man, just not a great recruiting performance out of these Buffalo, which, yeah, I mean, just yeah. You got to have talent to play at the top level,
right? And especially, like, look, the Pac-12 isn't even that good, but you look at their schedule and Jesus Christ, Parker, like, there are no guaranteed wins. They're out of conferences. TCU, Air Force. At Air Force, mind you, and at Minnesota. You've got to schedule Northern Colorado again. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, just get one win.
In the Pac-12, they're winnable games. Like Arizona and Oregon State are two teams on their schedule they could plausibly beat. They're both on the road. That sucks.
Yeah. You got to go to Corvallis, which I'm sure it's a beautiful place, but who cares? And then Tucson. Or Tempe. I never remember which one's Arizona and which one's Arizona State.
The over-under's three, and if they don't beat TCU, I don't know, dude. I don't even know if they have one. I don't think they're favored in a single game.
And there were four wins last year. So this is Darrell's third year. Probably a put-up or shut-up year. I mean, but there's just no easy wins, man. I mean, if you go 3-9, you've probably pulled off an upset. And I don't know if that's enough for him to bank on.
I think you have to. And, I mean, so you look at the recruiting. This is his team, right? These are all his guys. He's made a change in offensive coordinator that we'll talk about. He's made a change in defensive coordinator, a guy who's been there for 2 years. This is it, dude. One thing that I didn't really take notes on, Grant, but I'm interested in, Colorado State just built a big new facility. They just shelled out a ton of money to poach Jay Norvell from Nevada. Air Force is doing great. Air Force is a really sexy pick for a New Year's Six Bowl this year, just the way their schedule works and how good they're going to be in the G5. Colorado football is on the rise as a state, but man, it looks like the Buffaloes are just getting left behind, and that is not great when your in-state rivals are expanding their facilities and they're winning games, and you're not even treading water as Colorado right now.
No, and it's a shame because I don't know why, but there are certain programs where I feel like, hey, if this team is good, it's fun. I don't know why. Colorado to me has always kind of been that way. Like, I've never been there, but Boulder seems awesome. Like, the Buffalo is a cool mascot, yada, yada, yada. I like their uniforms, whatever. And they produce interesting players. Laviska Shenault, obviously, among them. Philip Lindsay, the Broncos running back. But they're just going to stink for a while.
And I have a theory about that. I think that Colorado, as a Big 12 school, has this like inherent romanticism about it, right? Like, oh, yeah. It's west and it's in the mountains. It's, you know, it's after the Front Range. It's out there. But as a Pac-12 school, it's just, you know, it's kind of a metaphor for like the Californians moving to the mountains and crowding all the cities and driving the real estate prices up. And I'm just not as excited about it. I for whatever reason, Colorado in the Pac-12 instead of the Big 12 doesn't have that same kind of mystic romanticism about it.
We could go down this rabbit hole, and I'll stop us after I say this, but I'm not sure what Colorado athletic-wise is good at. I mean, they're not good at basketball at all. They're not particularly good at baseball. They're pretty bad at football. You know, those are your big three sports. I just don't – there seem to be kind of stuck in no man's land out there in the Pac-12. It just
are you going, like an
athletic program on the downslide.
Are you going Ryan Gosling on the Colorado Buffaloes? Are you asking them what do they want?
I've never seen The Notebook, Parker.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to apologize for appreciating Ryan Gosling's acting performance. But
he is so good in The Nice Guys, it's unreal. He's a fantastic actor.
Okay, here's the real question before we go and actually talk about this game. Have you seen Drive?
Have I seen Drive?
The real question is...
I'm a white man under 30, yes.
Yes, of course. So for how many weeks after you saw Drive, did you carry a toothpick with you everywhere you went and just not talk at all? Because I definitely was impressionable. Yeah, you have a toothpick right now.
I'm holding the remnants of a toothpick right now, and Real Hero is on almost every playlist I make. So, yes. I've
incredible.
Seen it recently.
Incredible movie. That's a guy. Okay, let's talk about real football here. So I have a stat preview, Grant. I put it on Twitter. Gives us a reasonable expectation. It has TCU at about 38 points. It has Colorado at about 26 points. So solid 12 there. BetUS, the unofficial sports book of the podcast, has this at about 13.5 for TCU. TCU minus 13.5. It started out as low as 9, Grant, and it's really moved a lot. That doesn't mean a lot, except that people, you know, the perception of what TCU should be able to do, the consensus is kind of moving towards TCU should win this handily. Overall, Colorado was 120th last season in EPA margin, 124th on offense, 78th on defense, Grant, 127th in echo ratio. They controlled only 36.6% of quality possessions in their games. Not a lot of game control there. 117th in net points per drive. Just a really bad team that wasn't good at anything. There wasn't anything that this team did well. It was really identity-less. And just overall not competitive in a lot of games.
Yeah, and it's not just that they were bad. It's that they didn't even have personnel that really shone, you know, or shined, whatever. I don't know. Jarek Broussard was fine at running back. Besides that, there were no bright spots. It was just a complete dismal season. And even the games that they won, like they barely beat Oregon State. Northern Colorado actually moved the ball on them with the McCaffrey brother. Arizona was closer than it should have been, if memory serves, and Washington was Washington. But we'll get to the Washington game because I have a lot of thoughts about what the hell Colorado tried to do in that game. But it felt like a season completely without optimism. It was like a TCU West Virginia 2019 game, but for 12 games. It was an awful, awful experience.
I hate that game. Yeah, what do you want to do? You want offense first or defense first?
I do want to go offense first because I have mean things to say about somebody that I'm going to feel bad saying. But
okay, let's...
We should mention up front that bringing a new offensive coordinator, right? Mike Samford wasn't that great at Minnesota, so congrats.
Yeah, he was hired at Minnesota to run an RPO offense, and I'm not sure that Mike Samford knows what an RPO is. did not work out. I don't mean that's kind of mean. Sorry, Samford. Samford's a very long career, has a reputation as a talent developer and as a recruiter, which is, you know, two big needs that Colorado has. There was actually I love that Brennan Marion is like woven into the fabric of this podcast, but there was actually a big Colorado contingency, and I believe he interviewed with them, and they wanted to hire him to make a splashy hire. And Durrell is a little more conservative, wanted somebody in his network, and so ended up hiring Sanford. Sanford coached Jordan Love. And his big thing has been building confidence in the Colorado offense. So I like that word of, hey, we've got to figure out what we want to do and be confident in it. That's at least a step in the right direction, even if I'm not optimistic about his vision or the tools he has to work with.
You know, it's nice. Building confidence is something that should happen, but you shouldn't say it's what you're doing. You should say, hey, you know, we're going to be aggressive. You know, if you're a defensive coordinator, you know, we're going to fly to the ball. You know, if you're an offensive coordinator, we're going to get skill guys in space and you know, make big explosive plays. Building confidence should be kind of an unsaid thing, but the fact that that's what he's focusing on, it's kind of
a lot like, are you familiar with like the world of, I'm just only tangentially familiar with this, like the world of like VH1 or MTV dating shows where like a dude goes on there. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, are there things that you as a young male can do to make yourself a more attractive potential mate mm-hmm. to women and strategies that you can employ to, you know, better market yourself? Sure. If you talk about it too much, you're kind of a weirdo and it's not going to work out for you, right?
Yeah.
Date Mike in The Office, right? Or anyone who unironically uses the word negging. that to me is a little bit what this confidence feels like. Is like, we're talking too much about our psychology and not enough about, you know, we're not executing enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you someone who needs confidence. So this is what I was going to say. And I'm sure this kid's nice. He's from Texas. He's from Melissa, Texas, and the Melissa Cardinals, which I respect. Brendan Lewis is not good at playing quarterback. I have never seen someone scramble backwards as much as I've seen Brendan Lewis scramble backwards. And he takes so long to throw the ball. Parker, last year, if you look at his, you know, sort of you divide it between play action and no play action, he was worse on play action, and that was 20% of his dropbacks. Even on play action, he only had 5.1 yards per attempt, and those technically, if they're not those kind of throws to the flats, are deeper throws. He just wasn't good. He was under pressure about half the time he threw the ball. Not good at all under pressure. He also wasn't really that good in a clean pocket. It's like he doesn't have instincts. And to be fair, he was young. I think he's going to be a sophomore this year. He's a true sophomore.
So I'm going to push back. My soft spot for young quarterbacks and context on quarterbacks, I'm going to push back here because he was pressured on, oh my gosh, I thought I had it right here. 47%? Yeah, just an insane amount of pressure. So Adrian Martinez was pressured on 41% of dropbacks at Nebraska last season. And we think that's like absolutely chaotic. This was worse. And young guy, offense that really wasn't gelling with what they had personnel wise, asked to make a lot of decisions. And granted, it wasn't like 7-on-7 where he's just like, okay, watch the defensive backs and make your read. Also, you have a line that is just absolutely Swiss cheese. So
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
A lot of
trouble there. 57%, 57.8% completion, 73.7 adjusted completion. So some drops and some throwaways. On an 8 out of only 6.8 yards. Grant, just 7.8% of his passes were 20-plus yards downfield. Only 9 of his 149 completions were 20-plus yards downfield. Nothing down there. 60% were at or behind the line of scrimmage. So that's checkdowns because they did not run a lot of screens.
Sorry. Yeah. 9 completed passes 20 yards down the field is the most boring ass offense I can possibly imagine.
I'm contractually obligated to say that you said ass offense right there.
It's an ass offense.
I really think that the Tennessee transfer JT Shrout would like obviously win this job. Not that Lewis is bad, he just is a development guy and doesn't have the time or space to be developed. But Shrout, I think his knee is not right, man. He had knee surgery last August, and it wasn't even really practicing in the spring. Doesn't look like he's healthy. So we have a big old fat or on the depth chart for Colorado there, which is maybe a theme of this game is like we could see 5 quarterbacks play in this game. That's very funny to me.
Easily. It would be – matter of fact, I read Colorado is one of those programs I respect where they like – they have a guy that like writes game previews and does them fairly well. But they have, like, in the game preview, you know, they mentioned Duggan and Chandler Morris. And so the Frogs also have an interesting third option in Sam Jackson, a dual threat player. And I'm like, hell yeah, we do. Let's do this thing, baby.
I'm not accusing an individual of this, but I do just want to point out there's a little bit of, like, the fact that two quarterbacks are white and one of them is not, and the way that they get talked about is just, it's sad and it's unfortunate. It's also a little bit funny because everyone's like, man, he's real athletic. Like, and just words they would never use to describe. I think there was a study that someone did about MLB announcers. And it wasn't, again, it's not like overtly anyone's being bad, but it's like, okay, you should think about this. But it's like MLB announcers called African-American players class act, like at a ratio of like 95-1 that they called white players a class act. And a little bit of that, you see the way people talk about Sam Jackson, just because it's like two white dudes and then Sam Jackson, they talk about him a little differently.
As if like the only, like not the only reason, but like Max Duggan's biggest strength is the fact that he can also run. It doesn't mean Sam can't run. It's just like also call someone else.
It's just funny. I do want to point out, speaking of the three options on the depth chart, Grant, we would have bantered about the depth chart at the beginning of this episode.
Meant anything?
But but there was no surprises. Like, we knew. I think that's so refreshing. And so the offensive defense preview was the depth chart preview because it was what we thought was going to happen.
Yes, that's correct. The Purple Theory podcast is 100% correct on all depth chart matters.
We have a 100% hit rate of texting Jamie Plunkett and him telling me the right things.
There were, I think, four oars at running back for TCU. I think everybody got an oar.
I think every running back in America is an oar, because if you look at Colorado's depth chart, they have a four-way oar at running back. I'm breezing over this quickly because I'm not super excited about either any of these options. Broussard was, you know, 37.3% of targets. He averaged 4.7 yards per attempt. He was the guy that when they won a game was able to rush a little bit. Fontenot is their second option. He's kind of at the top of the oars, but he only had 3.0 yards per attempt, five TDs, really not a lot of TDs overall, but, in the run game, not a lot either.
There weren't
many
in the passing game either. So there weren't enough to go around.
I also didn't really notice, I'm confirming and looking at the depth chart again, so I don't say something out of turn, but I feel like I didn't notice any of these guys being dramatically physically different. I know we've talked about like Thunder and Lightning with some other guys, but tailbacks are all, you know, generally, you know, 6'0", 200, 6'0", 190. And you have, you know, a guy in the redshirt freshman that's 5'11", 185, and a sophomore is 5'11", 235. But generally they kind of have a type, and maybe Stacks will be a little bit more of a fullback short yardage situation, that 235 guy. But nothing really stands out to me about this running back group, except Fontenot has a little bit of experience. So maybe these guys will, you know, by committee be fresh and have an advantage that way.
Sure, let's go with that. Looking at a little bit of tape from last year, Broussard was definitely kind of the more agile back. Fontenot, they kind of used as their thunder, and he would kind of bowl his way through on like straight runs. But when you're 6'2", it's kind of hard to be the thunder. That's kind of a bad sign. I mean, his only 3.4 yards per attempt makes sense the way they used him. So hopefully, there's someone on this roster that can, you know, run fast.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that is the Charlie Oferdahl, who's the smaller guy, the redshirt freshman. Maybe he is kind of a little bit of a burner and can be fun. But it'd be interesting to see kind of, again, as we're trying to be better consumers of football content, I want to know what they're doing with the running backs. I'm going to look at the numbers and say, who's out there? And when they were successful running, you know, who was it? Is there a variation in gap or zone scheme between those two, or those four, rather? It is unfortunate, Grant, because running is how they're going to move the ball. Last season, they on offense, they 111th in rush rate over expected. So a ton of rushing there. They were 37.8% successful on the rush compared to 26.2% in the passing game. So a little bit more successful in the run game, but really, really bad overall. So I think they'll try and run some more, especially with Sanford, who's going to be a little bit more of a traditional guy. I think they'll try and simplify this offense. And so we'll see if their run game can get anything going, and if one of these running backs kind of strikes gold and is a hot hand that they can ride.
Yeah, because if you look at the wide receiver crew, it's not necessarily encouraging. They do have one of the best names I've ever seen. Montana Lemonius Craig will start at wideout for Colorado. Hell yeah.
Yeah. That is magnanimous. I don't use that word lightly. That's incredible.
It's beautiful. He's one of the starting wideouts. Daniel Arias, I believe is how you pronounce that, is also one of the wideouts. Parker, I will say this. Colorado did move the ball to a bunch of different guys last year quite a bit. They had 10 guys in 2021 with 10 targets and two with nine. Brendan Rice, who had the majority of those, but 17% of targets. But there's a lot of guys that have caught the same amount of passes. It's just none of them stand out.
Yeah, I think the big thing that stands out for me is like Arias and MLC is what we'll call him.
MLC. Montana Lemonius Craig. I'm not calling him MLC.
They both had a pretty decent A dot. Like so Arias was an A dot of 13.8, but only a yards after catch of 3.8. And Montana had an A dot of 8, but only a 3.7 yak. So it's like that speaks to the quarterback limitations, right? I don't want to hold that too much against the wide receivers because, like, if your quarterback can only just get you the ball and can't, you know, lead you or put you when you're open or throw you open, it's really hard for you to break away and kind of have big success there. Grant, their most successful wide receiver was actually their tight end, Brady Russell, who comes back as a fifth year as a graduate student. He had the second most targets, 15%. He had 12.3 A dot, 9.1 yards after catch. That's a little bit influenced by he had a 65 yard touchdown. So most of that was probably after the catch and is an outlier, but still a really, productive receiver. Yeah. 28.6% of the time he was in the slot, man. Like, very versatile, was moving out. Yeah.
And he's 6'3", 250, so he's a big boy. He's not easy to bring down. Parker, I will say, the weirdest thing about this roster, R.J. Snead is not starting.
Yeah.
That's former Baylor wide receiver, R.J. Snead II, who I thought was pretty daggum good at Baylor.
I thought he was going to plug and play. Yeah.
Yeah, easily. And he's listed behind Maurice Bell. So I that's surprising to me. And
I wonder if he's not. I wonder if he's not fully healthy.
Maybe.
I know he's struggling with a little nagging injury, and maybe that's what this is in game one. But I really thought, I think, like, best case scenario, R.J. Snead is a leading receiver on this team. Gives you a dimension there. You know, obviously at Baylor for a couple of years, TCU fans are familiar with him. But that was a little weird to me as well. And so I hope he's healthy. I hope, you know, for the sake of Colorado, but it looks like he's not really going to be a factor in the TCU game.
Yes, which, you know, for TCU, that's great. But I hope he's all right. That sucks if you're Colorado. Parker, I'd like to say, well, let's move on to the bright spot in the Colorado offense. But unfortunately, we have to talk about the offensive line.
Yeah, man.
We mentioned before that Lewis was essentially running for his life. Colorado allowed pressure on 43.5% of all dropbacks last year. They returned three starters. None of those three starters had a grade on PFF above 57.3. Their left tackle had a 30. Their left tackle, Frank Phillip, allowed 31 pressures last year from the blind side.
Frank had a bad year.
Well, Jake Wiley didn't have a much better year at right tackle because he allowed 28 pressures.
Yeah.
It's not a good unit.
No, really kind of a lose-lose there on that. And left guard Casey Roddick was in there. He had 5 penalties and allowed 19 pressures from the guard position. That's just – that is not good. They're going to replace two spots on the offensive line. They have an or at the center between, you know, a sophomore and a young guy as well. And they have an or at guard, which is really rough because they got an Alabama transfer, Tommy Brown, and you'd assume – that an Alabama transfer could come to Alabama, or excuse me, come to Colorado and take any job he wanted. But
you'd think.
Maybe there's a reason he transferred from Alabama.
You would think so. And then even if you look, who they have at center, it's either they're listed as Austin Johnson or Noah Finsky. If you look last year, Austin Johnson played 23 snaps. He was fine. Fisky played 32 snaps. Hiskey had a zero pass block grade, which is impressive on 21 pass blocks, and 44.7 run grade. So a lot of holes on the Colorado defense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's zero grade on 21 snaps is committing to the bit. Let me tell you what. One thing that I did take note of, the average size of the projected starting five for Colorado, 308 pounds. TCU's defensive line, including 325-pound bell ringer Dominic Williams, 291. So not a really big size advantage, especially when you consider that, you know, Dylan Horton is going to be a little bit smaller as an end there, and they're only playing three guys. If Colorado's looking to be physically dominant, they're not going to have an obvious advantage. They're going to have to scheme up and execute to beat TCU. There is not a physical advantage here on the offensive line.
No, there's not. And I'll say one more thing too before we go on to the defense. Looking at Colorado's offense last year, and I know they have a new offensive coordinator, and they had a freshman quarterback last year, so they've been trying to simplify it. I think we criticized, ironically enough, SMU's offense as this last year. It felt like watching a high school offense. Not necessarily in terms of talent, but in terms of scheme. It was a lot of very simple plays. They'll go on. It was multiple, as the kids say. They ran single back sometimes. They ran pistol. They ran shotgun. But there was nothing innovative. It was very base level. And if you don't have the talent to succeed at base level, you need to innovate. Maybe Mike Samford will do that, he said in jest. But I just don't. Take it away. I'm fine. I don't need to watch it.
If they're so limited that they can only install this kind of high school offense for Lewis, I mean, they got to figure out something at quarterback. Like, that might be the reality is if he can take a step forward in processing with some experience, if they can keep him protected for a fraction of a second longer, maybe they can start to develop some downfield passing concepts. But man, it's not, not promising. I don't feel good about this offense. I feel like my numbers projection of almost 26 points is really reflective of how bad TCU's run defense was last year, and not so much the potential on this Colorado offense. I'm not high on them at all.
Now, again, this could all come back to bite us, but I don't.
When Colorado wins 45-3 on Friday, we're going to have a hell of a podcast on Sunday.
Going to be really tough. Parker, let's talk about the defense. So, listed as a 4-3 front, we'll get to that because I think they move that around a lot. Chris Wilson, defensive coordinator, defensive guy in the NFL. He has a Super Bowl ring. This is the first I'm hearing of this.
With Philly. Yeah, he was a defensive line coach for Philly when they beat the Pats. Doug Peterson.
He coached the defense to not let Tom Brady catch that Wildcat pass.
Exactly.
Last year, the defense was very bad. I've watched a lot of the Colorado defense. I have to talk about this, if you'll allow me, before we get into
a little bit of please.
Now. Colorado beat Washington last year. What they did on defense is the most avant-garde thing I've ever seen. They ran a four down front, 4-3, and they had their linebackers playing probably no more than 3 yards off the line of scrimmage for, I would say, 75% of snaps. They tried to throw odd fronts at Washington, kind of showing blitz, backing off. They did that on first down, second and short, second and long, third and short, third and long, didn't care. It's the only game I saw them do it in. They played a lot more conservative and actually used a couple of like almost 2-4-5 fronts against Arizona. I think he was just trying to figure out what the hell he was supposed to do with that personnel. Maybe he's got his roster down to what they want. Go back to the base 4-3. But if they continue to run that sort of linebacker close, hey, you know, we're going to throw a bunch of random crap at you pre-snap and then back off to do a little bit cloud zone and run man on the outside, Tay Barber is going to have 15 catches for 140 yards with an ADOT of 4 yards over the middle.
And
Chandler Morris is going to feast.
Did you watch? We're going to talk about who's going to feast on it in a little bit. Did you watch Northwestern Nebraska this weekend?
Actually, I didn't. I was playing in a golf tournament.
Oh, that's fancy. So, yeah, it was kind of a bad game. But one of the reasons that Northwestern did so well is because Nebraska's front line was really bad on defense, and their linebackers were overcompensating in the run game for linemen getting just absolutely swamped. And so Northwestern just ran like a little now screen or like a bubble screen RPO and just threw it to a fast guy and then made Nebraska tacklers miss. because Nebraska's defense is really bad. I envision TCU, I would love to see TCU get downfield and run their offense, but I think that TCU has a great fallback of if shit hits the fan, they're going to be able to go Davis and Barber out on the wing and be like, okay, we'll just run a little play action screen and make your linebackers take two steps forward, and then good luck catching Darius Davis, you know, streaking down the field. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there for TCU. Let me just read some stats out, Grant, because you know I put them in the thing. EPA per pass, they were 68th. They were 80th in EPA per rush, 110th in echo rate. Grant, 58.8% of opponents' possessions resulted in a quality possession. 79th in starting field position, 103rd in third and fourth down success for Colorado last season. So really a lot of opportunity for TC to work. I really would love to see them develop their offense and kind of say, let's work on some concepts. Let's treat this as a, you know, let's win this game, but let's treat this as a scrimmage where, you know what, if it's a little closer than we want it to be, that's okay. As long as we've gotten meaningful reps with the personnel and the scheme that we want to see.
Yeah. It's, there are so many opportunities for TCU to score on this defense. Like let's start up front. Let's start with the defensive line. So I mentioned before, it's a 4-down set. Small guys, 288 pounds. TCU's offensive line is 318 on average. You lose Mustafa Johnson. He led the team in pressures. Carson Wells was honestly a pretty good edge rusher. And then the rest of it was like, man alive. Guy Thomas made a couple good plays, but they were so bad in the pass rush. My main criticism is on the linebacking and the corners, but the defensive line was also not productive for Colorado last year.
No, not really at all. And you know, like Rodman was the big guy in the middle, but had some issues with tackling. I think he had like 12% missed tackles. I think is that stat. I don't know where I put that window. But some issues there. Really bad tackling grade. He's the big guy, and I think TC is going to have kind of an overwhelming advantage in the run game just because of the size is so big, like you talked about. But then Wells on the edge, I think, is a huge loss. We say it's a 4-down front. Grant, I think I put you in a weird spot there by saying it was 4-down. It's probably closer to a 3-4 with, you know, Wells being 241, 6'3", 241. Yeah. He's kind of that outside edge rusher guy. That's more of a linebacker.
For sure. I would call it closer to a 3.5 man front. Because there were a lot of plays where he had a hand in the dirt. And so I think you can, this is my own personal thing. I hate the term edge rusher. Are you a defensive end or are you a linebacker? Like, call it what it is. But I think it's a 3.5.
That makes sense. And so, I mean, can they get the personnel in there to generate enough pressure, but also stop the run? So like looking at how they're going to fill that void led by Wells, Guy Thomas is a candidate. 281 snaps last season, but mostly productive against the run. But then they have Jamar Montgomery, who might take that spot. He had limited time, but was way more productive in pass rush than Thomas. So it's like, okay, can they get the right guys in there and the right scheme to make sure that they don't have like an obvious imbalance in run and pass defensibility on the defensive line? I'm not sure they'll be able to do that.
No, and this leads into the next topic, which is that the linebacker's going to have to compensate. And let me tell you, they have their hands full as it is. Colorado relied so much on their linebackers to cover the middle of the field in the passing game last year, backing off in the line of scrimmage, just kind of staying there. They weren't good at it, and they also lost probably their best player, Mark Perry, to TCU, who's listed as a safety but kind of played down there, kind of the star nickel role around the line. They have nobody there that can kind of fill that role, and they were already bad.
Yeah, and I mean,
I will say Marvin Ham, incredible name.
Yeah. If you're a linebacker, yeah, Marvin Ham's a really good name as well. But they have an or at the middle linebacker. Like, they didn't even know who the guys are. They're still working out who's going to be able to play. And I think this is just, again, maybe some talented guys, but not really any guys who are gelling together. I think there's a huge, hugely steep learning curve for this linebacker core. And that coupled with what may be a thin defensive line, TCU will be able to run it. Grant, it is my hope that TCU does not take advantage of that and just run the ball a ton and win this game. Like TCU did against Kansas in 2020, where they only attempted 10 passes or whatever it was. I want them to work on the passing game, but man, the run game should be so easily exploitable for TCU.
Yeah, and they also have a different Perry, Quinn Perry, who did
play linebacker. Yeah, he's a linebacker.
I wanted to correct myself there just to make sure we were... Anyway, it's they return nobody. The middle of the field is going to be wide open against this Colorado defense. There's so many opportunities. And listen, we argue about Duggan, we argue about Chandler Morris. Morris is really good throwing over the middle of the field. He's better than Max is at it. And Garrett Riley is going to trust him to do that, we hope. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think there's, definitely a lot of opportunity to exploit that there. I don't even know if we need to talk specifically about the defensive backs. They're all new dudes. Like, they lost their cornerback duo who played really well. 7.4% of their passing targets against were broken up or intercepted. That's a very low rate. That's worse than TCU last year. Not disruptive at all. Tons of yards after the catch. Again, pass defense wasn't anything they were good at, but the pass defense was only saved in kind of those volume numbers because you could run against them so easily.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say there is I watched a little bit of their game against USC earlier today. Drake London just abused every defensive back that he faced on Colorado's roster. And I think Quentin Johnson is taller than Drake London. So just do that. Throw it to Quentin Johnson. I know it's new guys, same system. Just throw it to Quentin Johnson and hope for the best.
I agree with that. And I want to keep emphasizing, though, work your offense. This game should be entirely on TCU's terms. This is a good transition kind of into this. But like, this game should be, what does TCU want to do and be on offense? What does it look in the best case scenario? Let's run it. And so if that is throw it to Quentin Johnson, 15 times a game, that might not be great for the development of, a complex, multifaceted Power 5 offense, but it'll be really efficient. So whatever you want to do, just do it. Show us.
Yeah, no, that works. Okay, let's do that. Let's say, hey, you know what? I know you left a note here. I'm going to invert the order. Let's go right into best case, worst case, and then we'll take questions from fans. Best case scenario. You're exactly right. TCU is able to work its offense and do what it wants. If that is, hey, we're going to score 4 touchdowns on fade routes to Quentin Johnson, hell yeah, man. Like, one of those wind up on SportsCenter Top 10. Let's do it. We joke about seeing 3 quarterbacks in this game. It would be very funny. I'm not even going to rule it out. Dude, like, develop your offense. If Chandler Morris is the starter, have him play 80% of the game until garbage time, then put Duggan or Sam Jackson in. But don't use him during actual meaningful minutes.
Especially because you have a Power 5, you have an FCS game before SMU, because we have SMU on the horizon, and it's unfortunate, but that's a reality. TCU has to win the SMU game this year. Develop, use this as meaningful snaps. Let the guys get reps in the FCS game. Treat this like a serious opponent. Win this game as ruthlessly as you can.
Score 50.
Because you can.
That is, absolutely you can.
If Sonny Dykes is taking, Jeremy Clark did an interview on the Colorado 247 site, and I was clicking through it a little bit, and he kind of said, it's like Sonny Dykes took all the things people didn't like that Gary Patterson was doing and has been doing the opposite of them. Good. Screw win by one. Win by one can go, sit in the grave. Score 50 because you can. There's no sportsmanship here. This is a Power 5 game. Run your offense. Run it up.
Run it up. Parker, I'm guessing that's your best case.
Best case is TCU drops 50. Absolutely. Sam Jackson throws a touchdown at the end just because, look, man, we're up 4 scores and there's 12 minutes left. Sure, let him have the fourth quarter. That's fine.
Yeah. Best case is like 51-10.
Yeah.
Something like that. Worst case, is there a world where TCU loses this game?
Yes.
And it's like 17-14.
Because the offensive line isn't very good and neither of the quarterbacks are very good. And
no, wait, hold on. We don't know if they're any good. They've been playing in a bad system.
That's true. That's fair. The system, they're not gelling with the system. They can't figure it out. The system's not catering to their needs. Both of them get overwhelmed with processing in a real game and bail too much. TCU runs the ball a lot. It's a slow rock fight. And it's like two defensive scores for Colorado and TCU just can't jump out of the hole. That seems to be like an absolute very outside of the 95% confidence interval, very, very unlikely.
Yeah, I'd say it's 20-13 Colorado, I think would be worst case scenario. But I don't see it being certainly a blowout. Let's go to the fans before we get our actual predictions for this game, and then we'll hop around the Big 12 and take a look at what else is going on there. You asked score, offensive MVP, and defensive MVP. Colin Post, 28-17 TCU, offensive MVP, Kendre Miller, defensive MVP, Dee Winters. Fine. Carlos Mendez. Hey, Carlos. Love Carlos. TCU 28, Colorado 26 in overtime. Why not? Why not, Carlos? It's because I'll be there and I don't.
Because I'm going and I'm staying in Denver and I don't want to be out that late.
I don't want to be mad. His QJ is the offensive MVP, and Hodges, just straight up Hodges, not Hodges Tomlinson, Jamoy Hodges as his defensive MVP.
No. Okay, this is very confusing because TCU's defense is going to start three players: Johnny Hodges, Jamoy Hodge, and Trevius Hodges Tomlinson. That is very confusing.
I'm a very big TCU fan, and I do research for this podcast, and I'm going to screw that up at least three more times during the season.
Somebody who lives out of market and is going to watch every game on TV, keep track of how many times they get Hodge wrong. They call Hodge Hodges or vice versa. That's going to happen. Yeah, that'd be funny.
It's absolutely going to happen. Packer Frog just has a stat. This is the first ever meeting between TCU and Colorado.
Yeah, it is.
And there's only nine Power 5 teams TCU has not faced. We'll give them credit for the research. It's Duke, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Michigan, NC State, Rutgers, South Carolina, and Virginia Tech. I don't care to watch any matchups against either of those teams, but sure, cool.
Yeah, kind of fun.
Yeah, very fun. Tommy, TRF51, 42-21 TCU. Offensive MVP, Quentin Johnson. He specifies 5 catches for 150 yards, nice little 30-yard average, and 2 TDs. Defensive MVP, Trevius Hodges-Tomlinson, 5 tackles, 2 interceptions. Funky Town Frog, 41-28. We miss a PAT and can't stop him in the red zone.
Whoa,
buddy, I watched Colorado's red zone offense last year. It's the worst play calling I've seen in the red zone since I watched the TCU game. It's very, very bad.
105th in points per quality possession at 3.61. Absolutely terrible.
Awful. Offensive MVP QJ, defensive MVP, any linebacker with more than 10 tackles and a forced fumble. I like that.
So D winners.
D winners. Clint Foster, Frogs by 90. All 3 quarterbacks share MVP honors. Sure, let's get weird. What did I say last week? Something about letting them get weird. Let's do that. Jeremy Fox, 34-20 Frogs. Kendre Miller, 150 yards and 3 TDs. And there's no way Mark Perry doesn't get a pick. Andy Swain, 38-24. QJ, D Winters. That seems to be the consensus. What do we got? Joel, WV Stats Guy, 41-34 Frogs. Quentin Johnson and Dylan Horton. Brett Musselwhite, 45-17. QJ, I like this. Johnny Hodges or Mark Perry to honor the week one depth chart.
That's great. Brett's reply is winning so far for me in terms of score prediction and MVPs and the or joke. Very, very well done.
Very well done. 3 more here. Doug Redgrave, 31-17, TCU. Chandler Morris and Dominic Williams. I would love Dominic Williams to be the defensive MVP.
Dude.
I won't shut up for a week if that happens. Horny McHornfrog, calm down, sir. 34-20. Kendre Miller, 120 and 2 TDs. And Trevius Hodges-Tomlinson. And Surfer Dan, which is an assumed name. I am positive of that. TCU starts hot. Defense lets Colorado get close to the end. 34-20. QJ gets 2 touchdowns for 6. And D Winters gets at least 1 interception. And he does have 2 nominations for songs that we did not mention. Telluride by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and Warren Zevon's Things to Do in Denver as a recommendation.
Love a good Warren Zevon reference. I have a couple more just because I tweeted out and got some responses on the quote tweet. So the bad boy of TCU, who's making the claim that he is the bad boy of TCU on Twitter, 3520 Frogs, he has Kendre Miller as the offensive MVP. Highly likely would be very underwhelming if TCU just ran over Colorado. I'd be a little disappointed. Yeah. I hope they pass over Colorado. I want the passing game to be the MVP. He says Frogs covering the spread is an absolute lock. here's what I'll tell you. There's a way you can prove that. You can bet against Colorado. You can bet for TCU, and you can make some money or lose some money if you think it's an absolute lock. You know, great way to compare. Put some skin in the game there. Let's see. Colin Burns says TCU will not throw an end zone fade. I hope that's true because I hope that they score big plays. I hope they don't have to do that. D Duncan Soul, good friend of the pod, says TCU 31-23. TCU has better athletes on both sides of the ball. CV4226 says 42-40 Colorado. We miss a 2-point conversion to tie the game after giving up 350 on the ground. My brother, you need to go repent. Go wash yourself 7 times in the Trinity before Friday. This is the stank of 2021's rush defense not happening anymore. The JDH says TCU by a bunch. Ian Sadler, shout out to Ian Sadler, says go Frogs. His prediction is Mr. T and Rocky 3, which is pain. I will say that that's unfortunate because Rocky ultimately beats Mr. T. So there's some implications there. I don't think he was meaning, but I like it.
Rocky beats Clubber Lang. I want to make that very clear.
Okay, it's true. It's Clubber Lang, it's not Mr. T. That's fine.
One of the great names, yes.
Oh, yeah. Greg Immel says TCU 24-7 at the half. Elevation kicks in and the final is 27-24. I hate that. I will point out Fort Worth's elevation, Grant, 620 feet above sea level. Boulder's elevation is 5,430 feet above sea level. So maybe something to look for, but hopefully TCU will be up by enough. They can put the backups in and you know, people will be fresh and it won't spiral, but definitely something to keep an eye on.
I have a buddy who's running a beer mile in Boulder, Colorado, Saturday morning as a result of finishing last in our fantasy football league. He is from Lubbock, so good luck to my friend.
He'll have the beer part of the mile done. The elevation is going to do something to you. So that's a good time to insert the warning. If you're going up, go enjoy yourself, have a beer. But do realize if you haven't really spent time at elevation, you're going to get dehydrated a lot faster than you think. A lot of people think it's like elevation sickness, and it is a little bit. But that's really a lot more when you're like, you know, 8K, 10K. At 5,400, the effects of elevation are just going to be dehydration on the body. So hydrate as you're going up there. Hydrate, you know, drink a water every time you drink a beer or have a drink and be responsible. Just keep an eye on that. You know, you don't want to miss the game. You don't want to have someone have to take care of you and miss the game. Just hydrate.
Purple theories for the children. Parker, let's get our quick score predictions and then we'll do some lines. Give me, we're going to do one sentence predictions for each of these Big 12 games and other big games across the country.
But did we do, I'm sorry, we're working on
score prediction. Yeah.
Yes. Let's do that. Okay. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say TCU covers. I'm going to say it's, let's go 41-14 TCU.
I like it. I'm a little bit more optimistic about the defense. I'm going to go TCU 45, Colorado 6, 2 field goals.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You heard it here first, folks. All right, let's go around the Big 12. West Virginia in the backyard brawl on Thursday is a 7.5-point dog at Pitt. I think Pitt is going to win this game.
Yeah, I think Pitt straight up. I think it'll be close. But yeah, I like Pitt here. West Virginia, a lot of uncertainty. Interested to see if JT Daniels can live up to the hype.
I don't think he can. I should specify Pitt covers there in my model. Oklahoma State, 21.5-point favorite at home against Central Michigan. I'm taking Oklahoma State here. I'm riding hard on the Cowboys this year.
I will point out three things. One, Oklahoma State always starts slow. Two, Central Michigan, Daniel Richardson. That's our official G5 crush this year. We're riding with Central Michigan in the Chippewa. Three, Oklahoma State lost to Central Michigan, and Oklahoma State fans want to dispute that, but the game happened, and even if it was a bad call, there are bad calls in games all the time, Oklahoma State did lose to Central Michigan. Give me Central Michigan to cover. 21.5 is a lot.
Okay. Oklahoma is a 31-point favorite at home against UTEP. UTEP didn't look good last week. Give me UTEP to cover.
I think 31 is a whole lot. Oklahoma's going to have some learning curves. One good thing is Oklahoma's biggest problem last year was pass defense. And UTEP, as soon as North Texas stopped, you know, blitzing 7 and set back a little bit, made him work for it in the passing game, UTEP stopped moving the ball. I love Gavin Hardison. I think he's absolutely a gunslinger, the quarterback for UTEP. But without Jacob Cowing there, he can't just win those throw-em-up balls consistently.
Fair enough. And then Texas is a 37.5-point favorite at home against the University of Louisiana Monroe. That is a lot of points. Don't know a lot about Louisiana Monroe, but I'm taking the Warhawks.
I'm going to take Texas. I think it's going to be hot and swampy in Austin. They're there. And I think Monroe. That, well, it's a different kind of heat. And I think that Sark is really going to want to try and shut some boosters up by scoring a whole lot of points. So I don't see them. I don't see them resting at all. What, they've dropped like 70 on Rice last year or something. So I think Texas will cover.
All right. Quinn Ewers, big debut. Other big games. Utah is a 3-point dog at Florida for reasons I cannot fathom. Give me Utah.
I hate picking
them
on.
It'll be hot. But.
I hate picking them on the road. I really am tempted to pick Florida here. I think Anthony Richardson's underrated. Florida.
Okay. All right. I have to keep track of this. We are going against each other on a lot of these picks. I got to see if I can beat the BetUS nerd. Oregon is a 17-point dog neutral field against Georgia. I have Georgia here.
Yeah, I think Georgia too. Kirby putting his protege in place there for sure.
Yeah. Ohio State is a 17-point favorite at home against Notre Dame. And I should note, Notre Dame is like a top 6 team in the country.
That's too many. It's too many points.
It's too many. It's too many. Ohio State's going to win. It's too many points.
I think this opened at like 11.5 or something. And has gone hugely in Ohio State. 17 is too many against Notre Dame, man. Yeah, their offense stinks, but they got a good defense, and shoot, that's too much.
Let's see. UNC, oh, Christ. Carolina is a 1.5-point favorite at App State. Take App State outright. I'm telling you right now,
you can't,
take App State outright.
You can't just walk into Boone, Grant. UNC led a very aggrieved and very depleted FAMU team give them a lot of hell last week. Their offense stalled until Drake May had a really big scramble. I wasn't very optimistic about what they were able to do on offense. Let's do it. Let's ride with App.
I just trust me on this. Take App outright. SMU is at North Texas, and they are an 11-point favorite. This is a really weird game to read. My gut tells me North Texas, but I'm not sure.
I love Phil Bennett, North Texas, man. I think he did such a great job last week. He's a really good defensive coordinator. I think SMU under Rhett Lashley will not miss a beat. Tanner Mordecai is one of the better quarterbacks in the country. I think SMU wins this game. I think they cover. Definitely they win. I think they cover the 11.
Okay. Arkansas. Oh, this is a tasty game. Arkansas That's is spicy. A 6.5-point favorite at home against Cincinnati. Arkansas is one of the teams I'm riding with this year. Give me Arky.
I'm doing that too. Man, you just look at how Alabama lined up and absolutely ran over a stacked Cincinnati team. And then you think Arkansas wasn't that much worse in the trenches than Alabama last season. Might have had a better offensive line than Alabama last season. And Cincinnati lost 9 guys to the NFL draft. Yeah, dude. Sorry. Good story last year, though.
Yeah. Have fun, Luke Fickell. Houston is a 4.5-point favorite at certainly not at UTSA. Oh, meet. But I'm taking Houston.
Yeah, we love our UTSA brethren, and shout out to making the Owl Dome really loud. But Clayton Toon to Tank Dell is going to be one of the most productive quarterback to wide receiver combos in the G5. I don't know that UTSA is going to be able to keep up with Houston in terms of score there.
Yeah, this is whole goes. He's going to try to put up 70 in this game, and he very well might do it.
And senior quarterbacks under Hulgo, man, who can forget Wild Bill Greer in 2018, right? They just do great.
one of the more electric quarterback seasons I've ever seen. It was really fun watching Will Greer that year. Parker, is there anything else we need to touch on before we sign off and see each other in like 3 days at Folsom Field in Boulder, Colorado?
No, excited for real football, man. I think this is a good preview. Hopefully you learned some stuff about Buffalo and Bison. Hopefully you learned how to watch the game a little bit better and what to watch for. And as always, make sure you're following Grant on Twitter at Grant McGalliard, spelled like it sound. Follow me on Twitter at StatsOWAR. And if you're having a tailgate on Friday, if you're drinking beer somewhere before the game, let us know, man. We'll come say hey.
And we'll steal your beer, too. This I'll pay for has beer. Been... this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. Parker, go Frogs, baby.
Go Frogs.